of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. You are here with Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista, and we
Good
appreciate
evening.
You.
Hello, hello.
I appreciate you tuning in to hear what's going on in the food world, here where we talk about food for an hour straight, you know, but, you know, you spend more time than that just eating food in a typical day. But anyway, you found us here on KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. And again, the number down here, if you'd like to call in and talk to Ben, Ben would love to take your question or even pass you through. Isn't that right, Ben?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef. There you go. 530-605-4567. Again, that number, 530-605-4567. Or you can even type it into cookinglikeapropodcast.net. And again, you can send questions anytime you want to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. If I was to make just a suggestion, just maybe write that down on a little post-it and stick it somewhere in your kitchen. And then if you ever have a situation where you're like, you know, I'm not sure what to do about this, then just send the question in and we will get to it every Wednesday here at Cooking Like a Pro on KCNR. So you've found us and we're glad about that. But there are some things we are sad about. We are sad about just the seasonality of, you know, vegetables mainly, because most other things are, you know, proteins are farm raised, they're available year round. But, you know, vegetables, when they go out of season, they really lose their flavor, especially tomatoes. When you order tomatoes from, you know, out of the country, and they taste like the box that they were.
Yeah, they taste like cardboard.
That they were shipped in, yeah.
They look like cardboard.
Yeah, I talked to Mom and Dad. They said that they had their last BLT. I know that we've had our last BLT with fresh tomato. I mean, it's just.
Well, you were getting ready to pull the plants. Was there any tomatoes left to pull off?
There's a few cherries in there that the deer haven't gotten yet.
None of the beefsteak were left?
No, looks like, I don't know, it might have been the wind. Something might have took them out. It was looking pretty slim. So it's time to feed the leftover plants. We'll feed those to the
neighboring sheep. Yeah.
And then
but I gotta say, I mean, I'm sad, but I don't have to water them anymore. I don't have to take care of them anymore. But I did get my $23 tomato, I think I estimated, by the time the water, the dirt, the time,
oh,
and the fertilizer
on,
to make that one tomato.
Oh. You know, you can't tell me it wasn't worth it, though.
It was the most expensive homegrown tomato in the history.
And it was a great BLT. It probably, you know, worked out to, oh, I don't know, $15, $20 a bite.
Yeah.
Maybe,
but as it, for anybody that has not turned up their garden, if you do have green tomatoes, pick them, sit them in a location where they can still ripen. They will ripen. You can pull your tomatoes in November and still get red tomatoes in December.
You know, you can, but then again, there's fried green tomatoes too. Just remember that acid hasn't had a chance to turn into much, you know, natural sugar yet. So it's going to be highly acidic. So if you're going to fry green tomatoes, if you're doing green tomatoes, folks, just kind of treat it like you would eggplant. Like if you're doing a fried eggplant parmesan, the only difference maybe flour, buttermilk, and cornmeal, something like that would be a nice option. But remember that the finished product is going to have a lot more acid in it, so you may want to go with a sauce that maybe some kind of a sauce that doesn't is
something more
that.
Creamy because they are more acidic.
Yeah, or something maybe with tomato, but not as much acid. You know, in the tomato. Tomato has so much acid.
What about a cheese sauce?
Yeah, cheese sauce would work.
Okay.
Yeah, I think cheese sauce would work. But anyway, so stuff that's going out of season. We have tomatoes, which again are right there at the very end. And then and bell peppers. I know our bell peppers are done. Mom and Dad, they got their last bell peppers
basically
out of the
way. Basically anything that's the soft skinned.
Yeah, cucumbers, eggplant, all your squash, your zucchini, your summer squash, your patty pan, crookneck, all that stuff is pretty much gone. So, you know, think about these things when you go to the store and, you know, be mindful that if you want to get items that are the most flavorful, what do? You go in there, and first off, you see what's in season. And now they have this wonderful thing that I'm just getting used to. It's called an iPhone? Yeah.
Okay.
So you can go on your iPhone, and you can see what's in season and what's not. You know, so maybe just think about that. Keep that in mind. See what's in season, but then also see where it came from. And do you remember how we find out where it came from?
Well, you can look on the label. You can Google it, first off.
I think that's called an apple.
An apple? Yeah, it's an apple. Oh, and 7 iPhone? It's an Apple iPhone?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So you can use your iPhone, yes. You can use your laptop. Anything that's got Google on it, you can Google it.
But yeah, that little tag that's on there will tell you, you know, where it's from. I mean, if it's been...
avocados from Mexico.
Yeah. What was the 4 digits was just a regular... produced item.
Yeah, so you got the produce code on there, so you're going to have the country of origin, where it came from, and then you're going to have a number code that's going to tell you whether it's been conventionally grown, organically grown, or GMO.
There you go. Well, that's, you know, and
but that's just too much information.
Well, no. You need, folks, you need that information. You need that information, and we are so close. I know we've been promising this for we've been promising that it's in the works, but the vegetable, our vegetable booklet, which is going to be available on Culinarily Yours, real soon. I would say that we'll be up and running by the end of this month. So,
definitely. Yeah. It's like 97% there. We just need to take another last comb through it.
And it's got that information as far as the code and how to tell where the fruit or vegetable came from, but you know, any other things like, again, was it genetically modified? Was it GMO? Was it organic? So there's a lot you can tell from those little tags. So remember that. But, you know, things coming into season, one of the things I really enjoy are root vegetables. And, a lot of reasons I enjoy them. You know, they're good for you. They're hearty. You can do them in soups. You can do them as a side dish. You can even bake them, roast them, stuff them. So, you know, we're talking about things like your squashes, winter squashes,
hard skins, winter squash. Yeah.
So you got your root vegetables, you got your winter squashes. Again, on your winter squashes, you got your butternut is really become a very popular soup over the last number of years. We no one ever really heard of butternut squash for the most part when I did it in my restaurant 3 decades ago. But then again, you know, we started doing the soup, and then now you can get butternut squash soup like right off the shelf.
Well, and it seems like butternut has become the more the uppity up squash compared to pumpkin. Pumpkin has just become, you know, it's the Thanksgiving thing. But if it's a butternut squash bisque.
There you go.
And it's just, you know, more luxurious because it's a butternut squash.
But again, diced up acorn squash, spaghetti squash. On the different hard squashes, the thing that you do is make sure that the pieces are all about the same size. So when you cook those, they all come up well together. Sulfuric vegetables, always one of my favorites. Cabbage. You know, cabbage is really an unsung hero, but you don't need to know a lot to really make a wonderful, wonderful cabbage.
Okay, what's the difference between like a Savoy cabbage, a Chinese cabbage, you know, your traditional green and red cabbage? Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
Well, mainly density. You can look at just the regular, typical cabbage, what we call either green or red in the store, and they're going to be very, very, you know, fairly tough. It's going to take a little cooking to break them down. But cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. We're going to get a video on Brussels sprouts. I picked out 20 of the perfect Brussels sprouts for a video, a little short that we can do. Yeah, because we talked about last week, you know, something about Brussels sprouts and them not cooking them all the way through.
One point we got to make is right now we are coming to the beginning of that season, and so younger vegetables, beginning of the season, are going to be better than older, later in season vegetables.
Yep, more tender. They're not going to be as woody. But also remember, quite often the stalks can be used, especially in broccoli. Remember the flavor in a broccoli stem, I should say, stem or stalk, it's going to be concentrated. So because it's concentrated, it's going to be you know, more flavorful than a floret might be. But anyway, so you got things going out, things coming in, all kinds of stuff going on in the produce department, and
so soft skins out, hard skins in, more. You know, potato-y type items, because we've got Thanksgiving right around the corner.
Yep, and we'll be talking a lot about that. So we're going to be taking a quick break. This is Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us at KCNR, and it's 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. We'll be back in just a moment.
I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer, all winter without them.
Celebrate Thanksgiving at Black Bear Diner. Skip the hassle and let us cook for you. Enjoy home-style turkey, slow-roasted prime rib, and smoked ham with all the trimmings. Join us Thanksgiving Day for dine-in, carry-out, or delivery. Make your holidays special at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the French sauce with the O's and
all right, welcome back, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista, Cooking Like a Pro. And I just wanted to thank Charlie's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast, located in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, just about 10 minutes south of town. One of the very few family-run restaurants left in the area, open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner. And I, you know, something about family restaurants, because I've always had one. For a long time. But anyway, they're serving up the best homemade pizza, pasta, fresh crisp salads. Oh, you know, and Charlu is down there making gelato. So if you just feel like dessert, you can even go down there for dessert, but finish it off with some gelato and enjoy they got one of those beer walls down there. I know you like that beer wall, honey.
Yeah. And then I love that they also have takeout soup. You can take out gelato.
Yeah, they got that minestrone. You know, I like the split pea with it's great, but anyway, ales and IPAs, porters and ciders, so best deal in town. Sign up for the rewards program. You know, I think that a lot of people out there have rewards programs, and I think that's just a great way of being helped. You know, trying to help, you know, take a little bit of a, you know, weight or hit out of that, just the cost of things. But anyway, we had finished, not quite finished up, but talking about just seasonality. And the last thing I really wanted to mention is you got a lot more leafy greens coming in. And one of the things that I was raised on that you really don't see next to anywhere, certainly not in a, you know, in a restaurant, and that's chard. You know, Swiss chard, spinach, you know, being cooked and creamed. Sometimes they do that for the holidays.
Is there a rainbow chard too?
Yeah. And we were raised on the stuff. So that, rutabaga.
Well, probably more in the South. I mean, greens is more of a Southern.
Well, yeah. But I mean, super high in fiber, of course, dietary fiber, and vitamins, minerals, and all that other stuff that you need your leafy greens for. But
okay, so how would you prepare them? Because usually they're kind of bitter, right?
Yeah. Bitter. I just cut the cores out, make sure that they're clean. Remember, one of the things I guess to mention to you is to consider how the plant grows. And when you got leafy greens, it's similar to something like romaine. They grow standing up. So once the rain starts, you got a real good chance of finding dirt down that gets splatted in there through the rain. So you want to make sure you clean it really good. And then you just saute it up and braise it down until it's tender, salt, pepper, sometimes a lot of vinegar. You can use a little cream. A lot of different things you can do, but really cook it down until it's tender.
Do you leave the stem on or do you cut the stem out?
I try to cut the stems out, at least some of them. Kind of just take the leaf, fold the leaf in half lengthwise, and then just cut most of
that. Have a little triangle off of it, yeah.
Yeah. But it's so good for you. Again, you can flavor them however you want. Some fresh garlic, shallots.
Bacon.
Yeah, a little lemon juice, bacon.
Let's do some healthy collard greens and put bacon in it.
Well, I mean, we didn't say they couldn't taste good. So, but anyway, so I know that I noticed that the 100-year anniversary of the Caesar salad is coming up. Is that the 100?
No,
it's
got to
be longer
passed.
Than 100 years. I think it's been around forever.
No, okay, so I checked Escoffier. No, Escoffier did not have it in his book written in the 1800s. Hmm. 1924, July 4th. So we've technically passed the 100-year anniversary.
Yeah, but it's like everything else France did with our food, right? They sold it, right? I mean, they really take credit for you go into a French restaurant and you might have that, or even an Italian restaurant for that matter, and they'll have that tableside Caesar that's just beautiful.
So the French have no claim to the Caesar salad. Okay, so is it Italian? Is it Hail Caesar? This is a little trivia for you. Is it Italian?
For me?
I'm asking you, is Caesar salad Italian?
I think it can be. I think it can be. I'm Italian.
Okay. Well, technically it is. It was an Italian immigrant that was in Mexico.
Oh, well, now you're just getting, now you're splitting hairs. Now you're splitting romaine.
Technically it was developed in Mexico location-wise, but do you know why?
No, but sweetheart, you're busting my croutons over here. I mean, I'm not sure what are we getting at?
We're getting at
what's the why?
So, during Prohibition, so the United States said, no more alcohol, can't drink.
Okay.
People were crossing the border. They were going down to Mexico, and there was a place called Caesar's. Okay. And the guy, Caesar, developed the salad because everybody was coming over the border and it was hot and they wanted to do something fresh and use the ingredients he had on hand, and he developed it for the July 4th weekend of 1924, 100 years ago.
Celebrating 100 years ago. Well, the thing about a Caesar is it's simple. But what makes a Caesar better and folks, it's not very difficult. Matter of fact, especially with the different ingredients that we have today, because, you can use anchovy paste. Instead of using an anchovy if you want and still get that salty, flavor that you're looking for.
Okay, I got another quiz question for you. Did the original Caesar salad dressing have anchovies in it?
I have no idea. I was going with the whole egg yolk. I'm on the Italian
side
here.
There was no anchovies in the original Caesar salad.
Okay, well, whoever added them did a good job.
Yeah, so it has become part of it.
Well, the French, I think they wrote it down. I don't know, I'm going to talk to Julia Child, but she's not with us anymore.
And Julia Child had it as a 12-year-old. She went down there. She tried it as a little girl.
But you know what I think is key? There's some keys to a good Caesar salad. Again, making the dressing from scratch, starting off with your egg yolk. Make sure you got some good eggs, pasteurized eggs. Make sure you're good. And then adding, your oil and your shallots and your garlic and your, be careful on adding any salt because, of course, anchovies or anchovy paste, whatever you're using. And we used to press that in with the back of a spoon. We do it tableside in my first restaurant. And we'd press it in there and smash it really, really fine and then mix it up and then toss it. But here's some of the things that really make a Caesar salad, worthwhile for me. One is the lettuce has to be crisp. And I know we got a video on that, and we need to make sure that's edited and up and running before too long, because having crisp lettuce is the key to a Caesar, as far as yes, you want a good dressing, and yes, you want warm, tender croutons, and that would probably be the second thing. And you also want a good cheese. Parmesan or Reggiano, something that's been grated. It's got that, it's going to add that nutty flavor. But yeah, you just, you know, toss it together. But again, you always want to make sure that you drain all the water off your lettuce. But shock it. You know, get it ice cold. In fact, if you're able to clean your lettuce and do it the day before, by far, best way to do it.
So the shape of the lettuce. So the original one, the leaves were not cut. They were not torn. They were served whole originally.
Yeah.
But there's different ways. You know, we've done it as a little wrap, leaving the leaf whole and then putting the ingredients down the middle of it and then wrapping it up, making a Caesar wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also cut the lettuce smaller. What takes do you have on how you should treat the lettuce?
You know, again, if it's chilled, I think you're fine. I think anytime you cut something that's delicate, like lettuce, you're always taking that opportunity or that chance, rather, to bruise the lettuce itself. And you don't want to bruise it. So that's why sometimes they'll say carefully tear it, or they'll say use a really sharp knife.
Quick, sharp cuts.
Yeah, just a quick sharp cut so you don't have that bruising. Because lettuce, of course, is, you know, anywhere between, you know, 85 and 95 or 98% water.
Okay, so what if you want to do a grilled Caesar salad? Can you do that? Yeah. Can you grill the lettuce? Because you're getting away from your crisp, cold, chalked lettuce.
Well, not really, because I know that we, one of my restaurants, we did a grilled wedge. And we actually grilled the iceberg lettuce, which is even more, you know, perishable. But you just have the lettuce cut clean, get your fire nice and hot. Again, if you're not sure exactly how to prepare your barbecue, go on to Culinary Yours.
Yeah, and on the barbecue, free barbecue download.
Free barbecue download. You can.
But if you don't have a barbecue, can you just put it on a pan on the oven or the stovetop?
Well, you can do whatever you want. But whatever you do, you're going to want to make sure that it's, you know, not going to stick, and you're going to do it really quickly because the lettuce is going to break down.
So would you put it on a dry or on an oiled pan?
I would spray the lettuce. I'd spray the lettuce down or rub it down with a little bit of oil. But you'd want to have, the whole idea is to have this crisp, nice salad. So if you're going to grill it, which we've done before, then you're going to want to, the reason and purpose for doing that is going to be to just add that charred or seared flavor. Which is just nice because you wouldn't have that in a normal salad, so it adds that component. So Caesar salads, but I know we've done them table side. You know, get first off high quality ingredients. You know, get again freshly grated Parmesan, ideally grate it up yourself. Always a little bit of Worcestershire, a little bit of good oil, good olive oil. You know, also I would suggest making your own croutons. Right, the croutons, they have croutons for next to nothing, in the store, but they're also, just save the ends of your bread. A lot of people don't eat heels. My grandma used to love to eat the heels, but a lot of people don't eat heels.
I mean, now, what type of bread would be best for croutons? Can you do a brioche or a croissant, or can you just need to do white bread, or?
Again, you can do whatever you want, right? You can do whatever you want because you want to, sometimes that's how we make things unique. But traditionally, you would want to use some sort of a French bread, and if it had some sour to it, a sourdough, then that'd be well. I think the challenge is when you're making a crouton is you want a nice warm crouton and soft in the middle and just crunchy outside. The croutons that you get that are just dried in the store that come in wrapped in plastic or you gotta be careful. You could damage the roof of your mouth on that. But anyway, so you got your croutons, you got your lettuce. Again, anchovy paste is going to give it that extra depth of flavor. And serve it immediately. Again, this is a salad. A Caesar salad is something that you want chilled. You want it. The colder it is, the better. And quite often, cleaning it, rinsing it, preparing it, and then setting it into your fridge for, later on that evening or maybe even the next day. Keep it covered with a damp paper towel.
But don't put the croutons on because the croutons will get soft.
Yes. Yeah. Don't put the croutons on. Keep those nice and fresh.
Okay. One more question about croutons. Little itty-bitty croutons? Or what about sometimes restaurants will do a big, giant, single crouton that you've got to eat like a piece of bread?
Oh, I don't know. I think it kind of depends on what you're after for a final product. But, I most things you want bite-sized. I mean, you want something that's going to fit inside your mouth. If the idea is that they're going to pick it up and eat it like an apple, then that's a little different. But also the Caesar salad is great to just turn it into an entree. Add, you know, any kind of protein, whether it's grilled shrimp or chicken, salmon, there's a lot of different things. Make a real nice meal out of it. Yeah. So, and also we've had before the kale Caesar salad. Kale Caesar salad is always very nice too. And then, of course, vegetarian Caesar. So there's a bunch of different things you can do with Caesar salad. And since we're celebrating the 100th year, yeah, let's just do, we'll do Caesar throughout the holidays. How about that? So, all right. So anyway, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista back in just a moment. Cooking Like a Pro.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights, don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Hello, Northern California. This is Rollin with the Flag Center. With fire season clearly upon us, we're inviting you to join us in celebrating all police, firefighters, and first responders who keep us safe day and night through thick and thin. We salute you. The Flag Center keeps plenty of thin blue line and thin red line flags in stock. To get yours, stop by the Flag Center at 2124 Hilltop Drive or on the web at theflagcenter.com. Flags, flagpoles, and accessories since 1980.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Redding and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085. And check out their website at authoritypm.com.
You are, because it's going to be a hot and mighty silver pot.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back. Yeah, we are still here. And again, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you finding us here on KCNR, 1460 AM. And sometimes, depending on where you're at, the FM works a little better, the 96.5. So we're here at Cooking Like a Pro, and we're talking about what's in season and what's not in season. And, of course, the Caesar salad, just a wonderful salad that you can do so many really cool things to. And you had told me something else, honey, about the, what was it, A1? A1 is, you said, what, 200 years?
So not only is the Caesar salad 100 years old, 200 years old this year is A1 sauce.
Did you get a calendar with all this stuff on it? Or?
No, I've been doing research for different things. I just came across these dates. So.
Well, you know, steak sauce, and that's interesting because steak sauce is something that you use, was widely used. Now you really don't see it other than maybe a steakhouse. And that's about the only place you see it. But it's, I don't know if it had to do with maybe that they felt that meat needed to be, you know, spruced up a little bit for flavor, or
well,
I'm not really sure. But
so do you know the history? Do you know how A1 came to be about?
No, that's the wrong question, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so A1 was developed 200 years ago by Henderson William Brand, and he did it for chef, or he was the chef to King George IV in the UK. So he did this for the chef, and or why do I keep saying the chef? The chef did this for the king, and the king loved it so much that he called it A1. A1 is a reference to the ships.
Oh, really?
And so the Lloyds of London Register would register the top ships for being the strongest and the best ships. And he says, this is A1. And so that's how it became known as A1 sauce.
Well, honey, you're A1 also. Thanks for looking that up. But, you know, steak sauce, it's kind of like when I was first coming up in this industry, it was back in the late 70s and the 80s, and you've seen steak sauce just about everywhere, and people would put it, and it's kind of like putting, I don't know, it's kind of like putting tartar sauce in your abalone or ketchup with your, you know, your filet mignon.
You've always had kind of an issue with A1, but I grew up with A1. Yeah. I love A1.
Yeah. Well, I like it as an ingredient, but that isn't all. And if I'm buying meat and I'm buying a higher quality meat, then, you know, I want to taste the meat. And A1 is a very strong sauce. It's dominant ingredient is got to be vinegar in there. I've never looked at that.
It's a tomato-based sauce, and it's got raisins and oranges and onions and garlic and celery and vinegar.
That's way more than I wanted to know.
I think it's the acidity. You know, just, you know, like a lot of people put ketchup on things. Mm-hmm. This was a very fancy ketchup, so to speak. Yeah. It's a tomato-based, you know, acidic. And if you've got a heavy, fatty meat, maybe that little bit of zing of acid and citrus and onions. And then you can use, I grew up that you would put, A1 had a lot of recipes for making marinades. You would use it as an ingredient with oil to make a marinade.
Yep. It's something that again, like I mentioned, I'm used to seeing it as a condiment, you know, for protein, but for the most part, really using it as an ingredient to, you know, in a recipe.
But now it is an ingredient. Okay, so this came out over the wire. They have made an A1 steak sauce butter, a steak butter with A1 in it. And they add a bunch of herbs and garlic to it with the A1. And so now they have a compound butter available that will be in the dairy section.
You know, my first thought on that, just as a chef, would be it's so hard to get water. I mean, water and oil don't mix. So if you're trying to get a liquid-based mixed in with the butter, then you're going to have to do something to it to cause it to be able to absorb it in there. So
it's whipped, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's whipped, but it's still very likely going to come out. But you did mention compound butters, and really, when we made compound butters, they were just garlic, maybe some minced shallots and some parsley, a little salt and pepper. You do a whipped butter, and then you would, once the butter got soft and flavored, we would just take a pastry bag, like you're maybe decorating a cupcake or something, and you just kind of run a bead along the parchment paper, and then just roll it up. And then we would just cut that, and as the steaks came off the broiler before we sent them out to the guests, we would just put a little disc on there, maybe a little, you know, quarter to half ounce disc, and then it would just melt, and all that flavor would just melt right into your protein.
Well, actually, using that kind of idea, so we use the air fryer a lot, mm-hmm. and I'll do our frozen hamburgers for quick dinners during the week, and I have started taking the frozen burger and spreading butter over the top of it with the seasoning, and as it cooks in the air fryer, letting that butter melt over the top of the burger to give it more flavor.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to add more flavor. I mean, you know, one of the things with butter is first off, the quality. And I know that you buy some pretty high-end butters that we just keep on hand, because the shelf life on butter is pretty substantial. And just to have something on hand to be able to use in a different application when you're cooking something. Maybe you're going to saute up some spinach like we talked about earlier, or a different vegetable, and you don't want that just regular butter or unsalted butter. You want, you know, something that's going to add a little you know, a little zing to it, a little difference, the flavor.
Yeah, there's different. There's, you know, Irish butter and, you know, grass-fed butter. The grass-fed ones you get in Costco, completely different flavor. It is a very different flavor profile than just your standard cubed butter on the market shelf.
Yeah, I had it the other day. I put it on my English muffin. It was all right. It didn't have the sodium that I was expecting. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, back in the day when we were kids, you know, we had to churn our own butter, right? Because, you know, be down in the dungeon churning butter all it is cream, and you sit there. I mean, and it's really easy to do. Go ahead and Google it. But it's just, you know, it's nice. I mean, when you're looking at a fresh product that you're making, not something that has any type of, you know, preservatives or, you know, anything else in it. So, yeah.
All right. So I wanted to find out what you think. I didn't give any heads up on this.
Okay.
So there's a compound butter called cowboy butter now. It's going crazy on TikTok. That's where everything goes crazy, right? So this compound butter has parsley and chives and thyme and garlic, but then she gave lemon juice and Dijon, paprika and Worcester and chili flakes. Do you think that would be a good combination?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be a great combination. And again, you freeze it, and the life shelf life is, you know, the butter will last in the freezer as long as your freezer lasts or is plugged in, or PG&E, you know, shuts our power off. But when you roll it up, you just want to make sure that it is completely covered and it's freezer proof because, you know, freezers work by, you know, sucking the moisture out of things. That's kind of the way that they just work. And, you gotta be careful because they can dry out or they can get, you know, different flavors from other things that are hanging out in the freezer.
But now, when you make a compound butter, you are going to freeze it. Should you go ahead and make it into its little discs, little individual portions, and wrap them individually so that you're just pulling one out when you need it?
You can. I don't think it really matters. I mean, we've done it before where we've actually done a little dollop, what we call a dollop or a rose with out of a pastry bag with a star tip, and you got this little, you know, this little disc of butter that. And then you just, you know, throw those in the freezer and pop them out when you need them. But it's a little more decorative that way. But we used to actually call it maitre d' hotel butter. Okay, so that's what the French called it. That's what I was, when I was first being brought up in through my French apprenticeship. Every steak got maitre d' hotel butter. You know, and the maitre d' was the person that, you know, met you, you know, at the door. I don't know if it was, if the history was that the maitre d' would actually put the butter on. I don't know. Might be. I'm not really sure. But, you know, maitre d' hotel butter. And again, like you mentioned, the cowboy butter. I mean, you could do any kind of flavored butter you want. Mince up some rosemary and put it in there. The thing is just remember that the flavor components, or maybe I should say the flavor profile of that butter needs to kind of match. I mean, if you did something that's, you know, had to say a rosemary butter, like I mentioned, then maybe that goes over some chicken. Cause you're not really, I mean, everything tastes like chicken, right? I mean, that's just how they, you know, how we.
Tastes like chicken.
Well, that's how we kind of, you know, pick flavor profiles cause it's just neutral.
Yeah.
You know, so you can do something like rosemary, but if you took a really nice piece of salmon or something and did a rosemary butter, then you gotta be careful cause maybe there's more rosemary than salmon and, you know, the rosemary is dirt cheap. Matter of fact, we have it grown all over our backyard. And then now this beautiful piece of salmon that you want to taste, you can't taste because it's overpowered by the rosemary. So
using compound butter, should it be room temp or cold?
Oh, well, it's going on something hot. So yeah, I would pull it right out of the freezer. You know, put it on there. It's going to melt because you pull something hot. Maybe while your meat is resting, remember when we cook meat, think of it this way. Think about if you're rubbing your hands together and you're rubbing your hands together and your hands are getting what? Hotter and hotter. It's that friction. Well, that's the same thing with this meat. You got all those molecules cooking inside this meat and the molecules are just going, you know, faster and faster and faster. And that's cooking your meat. Well, those have to slow down and calm down, before you go and you serve your protein or your beef or your meat in this case. Because if not, as soon as you cut into it, all the juice goes where? On the cutting board. Yeah, so unless you're going to eat your cutting board, it really makes no sense. You know, so you want to slow down, let that activity inside your protein slow down, and maybe while it's sitting there, what we call, again, resting, put the butter on there and just let that kind of melt and get that flavor. But it's, I mean, you're really adding a lot of really good flavor when you add a compound
butter. So do it as soon as you pull it, as you begin the resting process. Don't wait until it's rested and you're taking it off the table.
Well, you want to make sure it's hot. So in a minute, it should be fairly warm when it goes to the table, or when it's served. But yeah, I'd pull it out and stick it on there while it's resting and then just let it kind of melt into it.
And should you ever melt any to have to dip into?
Oh yeah, well, I guess that would depend on what you're doing. If you're doing like a, I don't know, maybe a crustacean, like, you know, shrimp or lobster or something, and you want to dip it into some sort of a flavored butter.
Like a garlic butter?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, steak butter. You know, maitre d' hotel butter. It's just another way of adding flavor. And I think that's the key is when you're adding flavor and you're thinking about flavor profiles, always think about balance. If I'm going to taste this item, whatever this item is, I want to make sure that I'm getting all of those flavors. I'm tasting all the different components. Because if you're not tasting all the ingredients, then you either have to question the amount of the ingredient or whether it even needs to be in there. Right? Because everything's in there for a purpose. It's all in there for a reason.
Okay, we will get some steak butter and try it out.
Well, the steak butter's not not difficult. I know. Steak's a little expensive, but we'll see. We'll jump off that bridge. But anyway, coming back in just a moment here, after the break for the last portion here, the D block, as we call it, we're going to be talking about Thanksgiving, and we're going to be talking about that a lot starting in this next segment, but all next week. So if you have any turkey or Thanksgiving questions, again, send those in to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Again, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. We'll be back in just a moment. You got Chef Cal, Mr. Chef at Cooking Like a Pro.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, and this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Gran Habanos Corojo No. 5 with the unusual Shaggy Foot. Offering two distinct experiences, Corojo No. 5 comes from Honduras with Nicaraguan, Mexican, and Costa Rican tobaccos, finished off with a spicy Nicaraguan Corojo wrapper leaf for a heavy and rich smoke. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
It's a beautiful night, and we call it Bella Notte.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Again, Chef Cal, Mrs. Chef Krista, again at KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. And we want to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving coming up, the holidays.
We have a three-week countdown starting now.
Is it 3 weeks from now?
3 weeks. I have noticed in the store that the turkeys have arrived.
Yeah. Well, the things about turkeys, and there's a lot of different questions on how, I mean, they're so varied on how you might cook them. I've cooked them in a barbecue barrel before. I've smoked them. I've deep fried them, you know, roasted them, of course. A lot of different ways you can do it. Everything but, you know, but a microwave. That's, of course, it's a hungry man turkey dinner. But, yeah, it's, you know, turkeys, I think the first thing people look at is how much, how big. You know, and usually a pound and a half. A turkey is about half, at least half of the turkey when you buy it, the weight of a turkey. Let's say you buy a 2 pound turkey, or I'm sorry, let's say a 20 pound turkey. Half that weight is going to be bone. It's going to be carcass, skin, things that you're not going to be able to eat. So if you get, you know, a normal portion, of course, of a turkey would be somewhere around the 8 ounces, 6 to 8 ounces of actual turkey itself. So, you know, with the waste, and that would be basically a pound a person, would be 16 ounces. Half that waste gives you your 8 ounces, and you're ready to go. So that's what you kind of, I would consider. And also I'd consider, you know, everyone likes leftovers, right? So about 50% waste, air on the heavier side, I would. And what is it? Allow to thaw. I would allow it to thaw for 4 to 5 days. You want your turkey to thaw in under refrigeration, and it's going to take a while. It you know 40 degrees, 41 degrees, 38 degrees, whatever your refrigerator is. So it's going to take a while. So give it several days. It's fine if it's in there thawed out for a couple of days. You're going to rub it down with some oil and some garlic, depending on how you're going to prepare it. One thing that I remember in the restaurants business, I remember we generally would do, I don't know, maybe 40. I cook about 40 to 50 turkeys every Thanksgiving. Some of the bigger properties I was at, we cooked a lot more than that. But when a turkey itself gets about 24 pounds, somewhere in around the 23, 24 pound area, the carcass quits growing. It quits growing. It's not going to get much bigger. So after that, you're going to yield more meat. So you're always going to have a better deal if you get a turkey that's above 24 pounds. So, you know, again.
So a 24-pound turkey is kind of what you want to go for? Or, well, what will fit in an oven, too? I mean,
well, it's got to fit in the oven, but you also got to feed everybody. So, I mean, how many people are coming over? And that's one of the things I'd look at.
Or what about two smaller turkeys? Is one bigger turkey better? I mean, does the meat get any more older, tougher, the bigger the bird gets?
No, it will get tougher. Everything gets tougher as it gets older. But the reality is, if you go with two small birds, then you're really looking at a much greater waste, you know, because of the smaller, you know, the size of the carcass and the smaller yield on the actual meat itself. So I would get a bigger one. Make sure you thought out well, figure out how you want to cook it. You know, again, we didn't have iPhones or anything like that. We didn't have computers. I remember when I first started out.
We had cookbooks.
Did we have cookbooks?
Yeah. Yes, we had cookbooks.
So just, you know, whatever your source is, you know, find your source and look it up. And, you know, I would say experiment. You know, you can also just use a turkey breast. You know,
I was going to say, what if you don't want to get the whole bird? You just want it all done for you, all the bones out of it.
Then just get turkey breast, and then you can roast it. It doesn't take very long. Usually, they run between maybe 3 and 8 pounds.
Don't they get them over? They just take the bone out and all the dark meat and the white meat's all wrapped up into one.
They can
package.
Do that. They can do that if they eviscerate it. But no, for the most part, you want if you want white meat. Then just get the breast, and that's kind of the reason to cook a whole turkey is because the breast is going to be your white meat, and of course the wings, yeah, and then your leg and your thigh are going to be your dark meat, which is going to take a little longer to cook. So that's what you're going to want to check. You're going to want that inside bone. So if you imagine a turkey, you know, like we have turkeys around our house. You see a turkey walking, they're walking on their legs. Right there in those, in that bottom joint between the leg and the thigh, that's where you want your temperature gauge to go. And you want that to be 160 as a final temperature. If you're cooking something really hot and you pull it out at 160, it's going to keep going. It might even go to 170, depends on where you put it. You can keep it in some place where it's warm, or you can allow it to cool down. So.
Okay, now breast. White meat and dark meat cook different times, different lengths. Yeah. Well, so go over that for me.
Well, breast side up. You can flip it if you want. A lot of times what they'll do is we'll cover a turkey with foil through most of the cooking and then allow it to...
But the dark meat takes longer than the white meat, correct?
Yeah, but when it's on the bottom and you're cooking it and you're roasting it, they're going to be done right about the same time.
Because they're smaller than a lot of the breasts?
Quite a bit smaller. Yeah, quite a bit
smaller. So they should be done about the same time.
And then just make sure you always get the what? What's on the other side of the turkey? You don't remember?
No.
Oh, come on. It's a mollusk. It's a mollusk. Oyster.
Oh.
The oyster.
Like, what are you talking
the
about?
The oyster on the other side. I tell you, most people throw away their oyster.
I didn't grow up doing eating the oyster. You guys and your family fight over the oyster, and I... Ben has something to say. Okay.
You said what was on the other side of the turkey, and it made me wonder, why did the turkey cross the road?
Okay.
To go to McDonald's?
No, it was Thanksgiving, and he wanted to get with the other sides.
Oh, dear.
Oh, there you go.
I love you guys, too.
Yeah, well, thanks, Ben. We appreciate you chiming in on that one. But there's so many different things you can do. And take your turkey and be creative, folks. Be creative. Maybe do a regular roasted turkey and then maybe play with a breast, wrap it in something, you know, do a different cooking method on it. Same thing with cranberry sauce, you know. You can get just a regular gelled cranberry sauce, of course. The old Ocean Spray. You know what? I seen something, I don't know why I was looking. I don't know where it came from, but on the Ocean Spray, when they make Ocean Spray, it's the only thing, a canned cranberry sauce, that when they make it and it goes through the line, is always upside down. The can is upside down.
And it drives me nuts because I have to put the can upside down in my cabinet and it just drives me insane.
And the reason why is so when you open it up, it slides right out.
There you go.
Yeah, those guys that designed the cans, I mean, these guys are on top of it. But
now,
but
do you stuff a turkey typically?
Okay, well, now you're getting into two different things, okay? Stuffing the turkey versus is it stuffing or is it dressing? Yeah, so if it's stuffed inside, then yes, it's called stuffing. If it's baked separately, it's going to be called dressing. But if you stuff it, you do want to be careful and make sure that it's a cold turkey and you're stuffing it with cold refrigerator temperature stuffing. You never want to stuff a turkey that takes so long to cook with warm, because you're taking a raw protein and stuffing a warm stuffing in there, and the bread and the mixture and the celery and the, you know, carrots and or onions, whatever your stuffing is, and it's going to just bring the temperature up on that inside of that turkey and that raw meat.
Okay, so for me, I personally can't stand stuffing because to me it's just soggy. What if you just put aromatics and oranges and lemons and herbs inside the cavity just for flavor infusion?
Oh yeah, I mean you can add anything you want. You know, I agree. You know, but you know the stuffing generally is going to be a little bit wetter, maybe you know a little less. But you got the moisture from the inside of the turkey, but maybe a little bit less, you know, moisture in the actual mix, because basically you're looking at croutons, right? Sauteed onions, celery, and by far the number one thing you want to go make sure you go out and get is poultry seasoning. I'd get it like in the next week. I've definitely been in stores around Thanksgiving, and it's gone, yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Right now you should start your shopping, and it's okay. Go ahead and get your frozen turkey now. Go ahead and get your seasonings now. And if you're going to be doing the croutons for stuff, then get it now. Or get your regular bread and dry it out now.
Yeah. Well, we got a bunch of actual sage growing outside. So we got sage and oregano, and it's still looking good. And probably use a little bit of rosemary. Make kind of an herb mix and then blend it in. But, again, even mentioning being creative. I mean, are you going to use – I mean, I have cranberry sauce recipe that's exceptional that I got – from a friend of mine a long time ago, and it's actually the cranberries are raw, and it's made with what is it?
It's a relish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a Jello, in it. But then again, a lot of times you cook the cranberries down, and then you add your spices again, not seasonings, but spices. Your cloves, your nutmeg, your cinnamon, those kind of things.
So speaking about what's coming in and out of season, cranberries are in season, and it's going to be very brief. And you can freeze them. So if you go to the store and buy them and you want to have a mid-year Thanksgiving, go ahead and freeze them.
If you're going to cook them, then yes, no problem. Definitely freeze them because they'll last forever. But when you freeze a piece of produce, whether a fruit or a vegetable, remember the water that's inside of that is going to expand in size and it's going to break it down. So when you pull your cranberries out of the freezer, be ready for them to already be soft because they've broken that structure because of the water that's inside of it because it is mostly water. But again, so cranberry sauce, canned, frozen, fresh, are you going to cook it? Are you not going to cook it? And that goes with everything else, whether it's your mashed potatoes, whether it's your dressing that we mentioned, and, you know, or your pie, your pumpkin pie, your apple pie, your mince pie, whatever it happens to be. Be creative and come up with something fun this year because everyone's kind of used to the same thing on Thanksgiving year after year. So maybe spice it up and try something different.
And that's actually interesting in our family is we didn't go with a lot of the tradition. We always tried to do something a little different every year. My mom used to make sherry glazed onions over broccoli. And then another thing we did was one year we were able to find mini artichokes. We had artichokes for Thanksgiving, little mini individual artichokes.
I mean, you know, green beans and, you know, Campbell's cream of mushroom soup.
No, thank you.
You know that, that casserole was actually invented by an employee at Campbell's.
I'm sure it was.
It was. So anyway, we appreciate you listening in today, as we talk about food here on Cooking Like a Pro.
And remember, if you want to hear any of our previous shows, including tonight's, go ahead and look for the Cooking Like a Pro podcast on Apple and Spotify and YouTube. And let's not forget to make someone's day taking the random out of random acts of kindness. And we want to bless you and yours as you prepare for this holiday season coming up.
Yeah. And we will definitely see you next time on Cooking Like a Pro. Again, you've found us here, KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. We will look forward to talking to you next week about Thanksgiving. If you have any questions, send them off to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. This is Chef Cal signing off along with Mrs. Chef Krista.
Have a good night.
Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.